ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ गणपतिहं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमम् ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्नोतिभिस्सीदसादनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः रातपतये नमो गणपतये नमः प्रमथपतये नमस्ते स्तु लम्बोदराय एकदन्ताय विघ्ननाशिने शिवसुताय वरदमूर्तये नमो नमः ॐ सहनावतु सहनोभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ श्री परमात्मने नमः ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी We know very well in one of the dhyana shlokas we saw in the previous class sarva upanishadaha gavaha dugdha gopala nandanaha parthaha vatsaha sudhihi bhokta dugdham gita amritam mahat. We saw all the Upanishads are as good as the cows, I mean they're likened to the cows, and the milk milked from the Upanishads, cows of Upanishads, is the Bhagavad Gita, which means Bhagavad Gita is the essence of the Upanishads. So what? If Bhagavad Gita is the essence of the Upanishads, so what? Because we should know what is the connection. Upanishad, you know, is said to be the means of the knowledge of the truth, of the whole. We know very well the purpose of knowing the truth of the universe. Because knowing the truth of the universe, we saw in the last class, we need to know the truth of the Jagataha Satyam. We have to know the truth of the universe. Because in knowing the truth of the Satyam, as the what? As the truth of the self, truth of the mind, as one's own self. That is where one's freedom lies. Therefore, to discover the freedom from all limitation which is already there in the form of the knowledge of the self, and you need a means of knowledge, and Upanishads are the means of knowledge, and Bhagavad Gita happens to be the essence of the Upanishads. Bhagavad Gita also serves as the means of knowledge. Atma Jnana Sadhanam is also one of the means. It's Bhagavad Gita also should be understood as the means of knowledge. What then we can say, Bhagavad Gita also has status of being the Shastram. And forget that. So I just wanted to say that. We're wasting your time there. And second thing, and we started the second chapter, 10th verse, out of 10th verse, there's a Bhashyam which comes introduction to the 11th verse. What is the 11th verse? I had to tell you. The second chapter, which is called Sankhya Yogaha, from the 11th verse onwards, Bhagavan Krishna starts teaching. The teaching, actually, it's called Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavata Gita, Bhagavata, okay? Bhagavataha Prapta Gita, Bhagavata Gita. The song, you can say Gitam means song. Gita, Gita is a participle. The root is Gi. Gayati means sings. Ganam means song, singing. It's a gerund. Ganam means singing. It's a gerund. Gayati sings. Okay? Singing, Ganam also means song. Song, singing. Both meant by the word Ganam and Gayati. And Gita is a participle. Sung is Gita. And Gitaha, Gita, Gitam can say, all the words mean what? Sung. So Gitam also can be taken for what? Song. So Bhagavata, Gita, that which has been sung by the Lord, that is song of the Lord, song from the Lord, we can say Bhagavad Gita. It's a compound word. What is a song? Is the song or what? What should take? It stands for the teaching, Upadeshaha. Bhagavataha Upadeshaha. The teaching obtained from Bhagavan himself is Bhagavataha Upadeshaha. Or Bhagavata Upadishta, or teaching done by Bhagavan, Bhagavata Upadishta. Or teaching from the Bhagavan, teaching from the Bhagavan, teaching of the Bhagavan, teaching by the Bhagavan. What Bhagavad Gita. And here, so we saw, so where does the teaching begin actually? The teaching actually begins in the 11th verse of the second chapter. And for which Shankaracharya gives an introduction, which we saw the first paragraph of the Bhashyam last class. So what does Bhagavan Krishna start from the 11th verse of the second chapter? In the 11th verse, Bhagavan Krishna started unfolding the nature of the self. Bhagavan Krishna started talking about the nature of the self. Why did he start talking about the nature of the self? Why should Krishna begin to talk about the nature of the self? Atma Swarupa Lakshanam. Why did he start? What is Atma? What is the substance of the substantive I? How the substance of the substantive I is the same substance of the substantive universe? Okay? And what is the nature of it? Is it born? Is it subject to death? Does it undergo any change? If not, what is its nature? Etc. etc. He talks about the nature of the self from the 11th verse. So before that, Shankaracharya in his Bhashyam started talking about why did Shankara start talking about the nature of the self? Why should he talk? Because there is a need for the knowledge of the self. So if we have to know what the self is, if we have to understand what is the substance of the substantive I, what is the substance of the substantive mind, then we need to know what it is. The Krishna starts. But why should we know the nature of the self? Why should we know what the self is? Because we do not know what the self is. Okay? So what? If we don't know the self, what is the problem? That's what I explained last class. Because we do not know what the self is, and we do not know that we do not know what the self is, therefore, ignorance is very natural. Ignorance of anything has no beginning. That is avidyayaha nature. What is the nature of ignorance? Ignorance of anything has no beginning. Ignorance is always beginningless. We have to understand that. And ignorance of the self also is what? Beginningless. And we are ignorant. There is ignorance of ignorance, which is innocence. Okay, we do not know that we do not know. And Shastram helps us to understand that you are ignorant of the self. You are ignorant of your ignorance of the self. And because you do not know you do not know what the self is, we mistake the non-self for this self. This mistake is called adhyasaha. I told you last class, I'm repeating it now. Mistaking the non-self for the self is called adhyasaha, which again is we are helplessly mistaking the non-self for this self. And you want to, you intend to mistake, do that. You're helplessly, naturally, any error is natural here. And you don't need to feel guilty about being wrong. You're helpless. And this mistaking the non-self for the self is because of the self-ignorance. Because you mistake the non-self for the self, what do? We also superimpose the attributes of the non-self upon the self, which is called adhyaropaha, superimposition. And this, because the adhyaropaha, when the attributes of the non-self are superimposed upon the self, then you consider yourself to be a limited being. You entertain a notion about yourself. See, the notion you have about yourself is erroneous because based on a wrong self-perception. And you think you are a mortal, you are subject to time, you are born, you are subject to death. Okay? And all the limitations are superimposed. And therefore, what happened? Because you superimpose the attributes, because you think you are a limited being, you are small, insignificant, and insecure, etc. I am small. That notion is there. That notion being there, and there is a pressure that should be, that notion alone gives rise to something called desire. If you ask Shastra, this is how Shastram looks at it. What do we mean by a given phenomenon called desire? What is the desire? Desire is a state of mind. And how does it arise? How does it rise? How does it come into being? Any desire for anything, okay, desire for anything is very natural. We can undo them, destroy them, give them up. But all the desires for anything, any desire for anything is a symptom, an expression of the disease, the fundamental disease of what? The desire that I want to live long, happily. I want to live long, happily. Understand? So this fundamental desire arises, it comes because of the pressure, because of the notion, okay, self-centered notion, I am small, insecure. So this fundamental desire is there. You cannot undo the fundamental desire. unless and until you correct the error in the perception of yourself, for which you need to free from superimposition, you need to correct your mistake, you need to know what the self is. And because of this, are the desires fulfilled? They give rise to new desires. The desires unfulfilled also will result in anger and other agitations. Okay, definitely. And second thing, there will all the problems are there. All the problems one has in life, anything which seems to be big problem, huge problem, this problem which can be solved, any problem, small or big, all the problems of all the human beings basically are responsible for something called sorrow, grief, sadness, pain. The different degrees of pain, sorrow, grief, sadness, depression, dejection, okay, stress, anxiety, fear, all these things are because of the problems in life, and all the problems are because of this fundamental problem. I think it would be nice if you can read Swamiji's book on fundamental problem. The fundamental problem of the non-self being mistaken for the self. Therefore, it is very important for one to know what the self is. There's no way of freeing oneself from all the problems without having oneself, without having got oneself free from the fundamental problem for which one needs to know what the self is. Therefore, Krishna started talking about the nature of the self. And before going there, and here, what is the context here? And here Arjuna was there, battlefield, and he saw, I told you all those things. He saw his relatives and friends and the acharyas, and he didn't want to fight against those people. So fighting against adharma is a duty of a kshatriya, and which he had to do. Though even if involved himsa, killing, bloodshed, hurting, injury, but still as a kshatriya, it was his duty to fight against the adharma, to establish dharma, to support dharma, to protect dharma, and to protect people who live a life of dharma. That is his duty. But he didn't want to do. So, Shankaracharya gave a note, whenever people are overpowered by shokaha and mohaha, okay, where there is mohaha, delusion, the lack of discriminative understanding, there will be definitely shoka. Where there is ajnanam, there is mohaha, delusion, the lack of discriminative understanding, mistaking the non-self for the self. Because you don't know what is the self, what is the non-self. This lack of discriminative understanding, because of delusion, mohaha, thereby mistake, then this moha results in shokaha, grief, sorrow. Therefore, and once you, when the man is completely overpowered, overwhelmed by shoka moha, and this is naturally, the confusion leads him to such a state of mind that he refrains from doing what he has to do. Not only that, he will end up doing wrong things also. Therefore, better to do the right thing. Better to do one's own dharma. And he also mentions, even if a person does his duties properly, still karma is binding. Even if one does one's own duties, still the karma, the performance of duties, actions will result in produce results, and not produce, exhaust those results, one has to be born again. Okay, all those things are there, still it is binding. Even then, it is natural for one to become subject to punya papa. Okay, there's no way of becoming free. If one does not do what one has to do, definitely one end up doing wrong things, which will again is a papam, which again it will not help him to become free. And second thing, he said, so the only way here, it is the lack of knowledge because of which there is delusion, because of which there is shokaha. It is the lack of knowledge, it is the ignorance which causes shoka and moha. Shoka, moha are the bija bhuta we saw in the last class. I don't want to repeat the same thing here. They give rise to, they result in samsara always. Therefore, samsara, what a root cause of samsara, the life of transmigration, is the ignorance. Therefore, if this self-ignorance has to be dispelled, Krishna started teaching the nature of the self. So this is the content of the last class. So, okay? Now, let me go to the next new paragraph. It is just what I'm repeating what I said last class. It's repetition. I'm coming back to the new class. It takes some time always for me to come back to new class. He said many reasons there. And Krishna also unfolded the nature of the self, having Arjuna, the instrumental, and he teaching was for the well-being of the entire humanity. What is the last word? Atma jnanate na anyataha nivrittihi iti tat upadidikshuhu sarvaloka anugrahartham anurjanam mithi kritya aha bhagavan vasudevaha ashochan ityadi. So why did Krishna start teaching? He said, okay, we'll go to the next purapaksha, next an objection comes. So what was the conclusion before? Self-knowledge, lack of knowledge, which means self-ignorance is the means for, and self-ignorance is the root cause of the samsara, the life of transmigration, full of problems and sorrow. Therefore, one has to know, knowledge is the only means for moksha, freedom from sorrow. It was the conclusion. Now here the objection comes. Atra.
Atra.
Kechidahuhu.
Kechidahuhu.
Always is kechid. Kechid means some people. Okay, some people say. There is some people always everywhere. I tell you, they don't worry about some people. Always be careful. Just ignore some people. Just take good things. Atra kechidahuhu.
Atra kechidahuhu.
Kechid means some people, no? Some people. Kaschit, kechit. Someone, kaschit, kechit, some people. Okay. Some people say this. Sarva karma.
Sarva karma.
Sanyasa purvakat.
Sanyasa purvakat.
Sarva karma sanyasa purvakat.
Sarva karma sanyasa purvakat.
Atma jnana.
Atma jnana.
Nishtha matra teva.
Ishta matra teva.
Kaivalya, kevalat.
Kevalat.
Kaivalyam.
Kaivalyam.
Na prapyate eva.
Na prapyate eva.
Kim tarhi.
Kim tarhi.
Agni hotradi.
Agni hotradi.
Before explain the first sentence. What he says, kaivalyam means, understand, the word kevalam means only. Kevalam means only. It's an indeclinable term. Kevalam, only. And kaivalyam means noun form of the kevalam is kaivalyam. Kaivalyam means oneness. Oneness. Only oneness. So oneness of reality. Oneness means what? The kaivalyam stands for the reality. Why? There's no second thing other than the reality. The Shastram states, what is the fact about the reality? Reality, what is there is only the reality. There's no second thing other than the reality. Therefore, this reality is implied by the term Kaivalyam. Kaivalyam is oneness. Okay? And so the knowledge of the reality being freedom, we say moksha also is simply by the term kaivalyam. So the word kaivalyam means three things now. Please listen. Kaivalyam means oneness. Kaivalyam means the reality. Kaivalyam also means what? Moksha. Why? Because reality, okay, oneness, the oneness of reality being there, we say reality is simple with the word kaivalyam. And the knowledge of the oneness of reality is freedom. Understand? Knowledge of the only reality happens to be the freedom. Moksha also implied by the word kaivalyam. So knowledge, the word kaivalya means reality. Kaivalya means oneness. Kaivalya means moksha. So here, kaivalyam na prapyate eva. It is not at all accomplished, accomplishable, not accomplished. Moksha not accomplishable, not accomplished. Or you can say not. How, what he says, sarva karma sanyasa purvakat atma jnanishtad eva kevalat, only by knowledge, only by the knowledge of the self, one cannot become free, moksha cannot be attained. See, the argument is, what was previously stated? Only by self-knowledge, one can become free from bondage, one can become free from samsara, one can free from all sorrows and problems of life. But here the objection is raised, why? See, Shankaracharya raises the objection, gives an answer to make it clear for us. Okay? This is called, in teaching, there is something called nyaya, okay? Sthanu nikhanana nyayaha. Sthanu nikhanana nyayaha means, nikhanana means digging. Khanati means digs. Khanana means digging. Nikhananam also means digging. And sthanu means a post. Okay, when you want to put a pandal or something, what you should do? You dig the land, floor, and you put the sthanu, the post in that. And you can't put the pandal on that. What you should do? You should dig the hole, put the post inside, and afterwards, what should you do? You should put some small stones inside, and put some sand and soil in it, and you know, hit it nicely, and make it strong. Then you have to shake and see whether it is posted. If it moves, then it shouldn't be, the post shouldn't move. If it moves, again you have to hit it, again put some more small stones, again put some more sand and soil, and hit it nicely, see it is strong. Then when it doesn't move, strong, then you leave it. Similarly, any small under some doubts, we may have a lot of doubts in us, okay? And all the doubts that we understand, we know some things, but still you may have doubts. We may be, is it okay? No, it should be very clear. Doubt-free, clear, firm understanding, firm knowledge is what? Is important to make our knowledge doubt free and clear. Okay, this method is used. Sthana nikhanana nyaya is used here. So, what is the sthana nikhanana? How it is used here? He raises the objection, doubt. What is the actually what have we understood? Knowledge of the self is the only means for moksha, freedom from samsara, freedom from limitations, freedom from sorrow. Is only in the form of knowledge of this self. In knowing the self, there is freedom. So that we have to become very clear for us. Only then we'll commit ourselves to the pursuit of the knowledge. So some people say, so that he raises the objection. Kevalat atmajnana nishtake atmajnanat kaivalyam na prapyate. Moksha is not attained by mere knowledge of the self. Okay, knowledge of the self. Okay, that's what he says here. Sarva karma sanyasa purvakat atma jnanishta matra deva kevalat kaivalyam na prapyate eva. That too, which sort of. See, the atma jnanam is possible only if a person entertains, enjoys a meditative disposition. Okay, a contemplative disposition. So contemplative disposition, being endowed with the contemplative disposition, implies one's clear understanding of the nature of the self. Without having understood what is the nature of the self, how can you contemplate upon the self? Therefore, so one has to have contemplative disposition, for which one must have understood the nature of the self very clearly. Okay? And to have understood the nature of the self and to contemplate upon the nature of the self, again, one must be totally committed to the pursuit of knowledge, which implies one must have become dispassionate towards other pursuits in life. That does not mean, see, Shastram does not say one should give up pursuing other things. Please underline this. Shastram does not say one should give up other pursuing other things, give up other pursuits. Okay? Shastram does not say that. You should pursue artha, you should pursue kama, you should pursue dharma, okay? But know their limitations. Knowing the limitations of other pursuits, pursue the other pursuit, knowing that limitation of the pursuit. Okay? Don't overvalue the pursuit. If you think, okay, pursue artha for infrastructure. What can artha do? Artha can give you only infrastructure. Okay? What can the food do? Food can appease your hunger. So I shouldn't say don't eat food at all, because it will not make you happy at all. It's wrong to say that, isn't it? Eat food. Food is important. Food can appease your hunger is what is understanding the limitation of the food. At the same time, usefulness of the food. What can the food do? What the food cannot do? See both things. Food can appease your hunger. With reference to hunger, food is very useful. Okay? In fact, food alone can appease your hunger. You need food very much. At the same, what do you mean by understanding the limitation of the food? That it cannot make you happy always. Eating food, merely eating food, will not make you happy always. Merely eating food will not get you fulfill, will not help you fulfill all your wishes and desires. This is what is understanding the limitation of a given thing called food. Understand? So, like this, understand the need for pursuing other ends like artha, kama and dharma. So what is the usefulness of artha? Artha will get you infrastructure. You need to fulfill your kamas, no problem. But know the limitations. What are the limitations? Artha will not make you happy, will not free you from all your problems. Similarly, for the pleasures, all the pleasures are also fine. You can enjoy pleasures. They are beautiful, no problem. But understand the limitation of pleasures, the pursuit of pleasures, the pleasures will not free you from all your limitations, will not free you from all your sorrows and all your problems. So, one has to live a life of dharma, but doesn't mean living a life of... One has to live a life of values, but living a life of values is important, but living a life of values itself, being ethical itself, will not free one from all one's problems. This is what is understanding the limitations of artha, kama, dharma. Understanding the limitations of other pursuits. Okay? So please understand. Again, I'm repeating this. Shastram does not say, does not expect us, does not tell us to give up the other pursuits. But Shastram tells us to understand the advantages, at the same time, the limitations of pursuing other ends in the form of artha, kama, dharma. When we understand what ultimately I seek in life is happiness, And that happy is something to be accomplished, something to be understood, not to be attained. Okay? That means that happiness has to be understood as the very nature of the reality. Therefore, the reality has to be understood. Therefore, knowledge of the reality alone will help me accomplish happiness. Knowledge of the reality alone will help free me from all my sorrows and problems in life. Therefore, knowledge is the only means for moksha. Moksha, freedom from all limitations, all problems in life. At the same time, artha kama dharmas are not the means for moksha. They will not free me from limitation, they will not free me from the pursuit of artha kama dharma, will not free me from limitations and sorrow. That means artha, kama, dharma are all time-bound ends. What I seek is eternal, timeless freedom, everlasting happiness. Therefore, for which knowledge is the only means. This is what is understanding the limitations of other pursuits and knowing the value of knowledge as the only means for moksha, freedom from limitations, freedom from sorrow. When a person understands the limitations of other pursuits, knowing the value of the knowledge, being committed to the pursuit of knowledge will help one discover dispassion towards other things. Being dispassionate towards other ends means what? Understanding the limitations of other ends, that they are not means for moksha. They cannot free you from bondage. It's understanding limitation of other pursuits, thereby you are going out of desire for those pursuits, is in fact becoming dispassionate to those ends and discovering dispassion towards those ends. So when a person grows out of desire for other ends, understand the limitations, when he becomes dispassionate towards other ends, naturally he is totally committed to the pursuit of knowledge, and such a person is said to have the contemplative disposition. That is what is implied by the sarva karma sannyasa purvakat. Does not mean giving up the actions. The word sarva karma sannyasa purvakam means the person who enjoys the contemplative disposition, having dispassion towards other ends, knowing their limitations, being committed to the pursuit of knowledge, knowing the value of knowledge, is said to be a sarva karma sannyasi. And such a person, then only by that such a person knowledge is attainable. So here what he says is, knowledge attained, knowledge attained by the contemplative, attained by a person who enjoys the contemplative disposition, who is attainable by enjoying the contemplative disposition alone, is not the only means for moksha. Am I confusing you? Is it clear or am I confusing you? I made things clear?
Yeah, it was clear, and then I just didn't pay attention to the last sentence.
No. See here, the argument is, it was said before, knowledge is the only means for moksha. So here, knowledge alone is not the only means for moksha. That is what is said here. Is it clear? Then, what is it? I explain now the meaning of the word sarva karma sannyasa purvakat. That's what I explained all this time. Then, what he says is, if you have any doubt, please ask me, I can explain to you definitely. One sentence takes so long, so long to explain. சர்வ கர்ம சந்நியாச பூர்வகாத் ஆத்ம ஜான நிஷ்டா மாத்ராத் தேர் ஃபார் ஆத்ம ஜான நிஷ்டா commitment to the pursuit of the knowledge of the self or okay the knowledge alone knowledge of the self alone okay remaining steadfast knowledge of the self alone is the means for moksha if you say that is not true why objection comes kim tarhi why what do you mean by that then what if knowledge is not the only means for moksha then what is the means for moksha what is which can free me from bondage of bondage agni hotradi sino
agni hotradi
shrauta
shrauta
smarta
smarta
karma sahitat
karma sahitat
jnanat
jnanat
kaivalya praptihi
kaivalya praptihi
iti
iti
sarvasu
sarvasu
gitasu
gitasu
nischitah arthah
nischitah arthah
iti
iti
you see sarvasu gitasu nischitah arthah see the entire gita sarvasu gitasu means in on the whole of gita the entire gita this is the definite this has been definitely said what is nischitah arthah this is the definite this has been definitely firmly clearly said in the entire gita what has been said the purapakshi the purapakshi means one who raises the objection okay he comes with this it has been very clearly said in gita sarvasu gitasu eshah arthah nischitah this has been said definitely what has been said he says agni hotradi shrauta smarta karma sahitat gyanat kaivalya praptihi he says agni hotradi agni hotra means the one of the names it agnihotram the name agnihotram is one of the smallest and the simplest of the fire rituals prescribed in the karmakanda of the veda no karmakanda prescribes karmakanda of the veda okay prescribes I tell you many rituals many karmas the fire rituals Fire rituals are a form of worship. I have talked about karmakanda separately. Let me tell you here what it is. Okay. And agnihotram, what is agnihotram? Agnihotram is a simplest, smallest, easiest fire ritual, okay, prescribed in the karmakanda of the Veda, which has to be one of the forms of worship, okay, which has to be performed every day regularly by a householder from the day one he gets married. Then this nitya karma, it is an agnihotram as a nitya karma. It is one of the forms of worship. It is worship, okay? And agnihotra adi means etc. beginning from agnihotra. Agnihotra and so on. All other rituals prescribed in the Karmakanda. Where? Shruti. Prescribed where? In Shruti, in Veda. Okay, so all the rituals and all the forms of worship, different karmas, different actions, which have been prescribed in the Shruti, Veda, Agnihotra, etc. And also Smarta. Smriti means the karmas, the ritual that they are prescribed in the Smriti. We also have other texts called the Smriti. In Smriti and Shruti, all these rituals, all the forms of worship, Shruti and Smriti, karma sahitati jnanat. See, it is not by mere knowledge kaivalya praptihi. Kaivalya praptihi means attainment of moksha is not by mere knowledge, but by knowledge accompanied by knowledge, okay, accompanied by the performance of rituals prescribed in Shruti and Smriti. Questions coming up. this objection. It's not by mere knowledge moksha is attained, but by the knowledge accompanied by knowledge, supported by knowledge with the performance of the rituals prescribed in Shruti and Smriti. Therefore, knowledge is not the only means for moksha. Knowledge plus karma is equal to, become the means for moksha. That is the objection raised. Okay, that is the question. He talks about the synthesis of knowledge and action. Knowledge is not the only means for freedom, but knowledge and action together become the means for moksha. How do you say? Because in the whole of Gita, Sarvasu Gitasu, Eshaha Arthaha Nishchitaha, it has been very well stated, one has to attain the knowledge, doing the karma, only then one can become free from bondage. This is what is the objection. Then, Jnapakam cha ahuhu, say no?
Jnapakam
cha
ahuhu
asya arthasya.
Asya arthasya.
Okay. See, what they say, the people who raise the objection, they say, the entire Gita, this has been stated, okay, overall, in general, that one has to perform karma along with the knowledge. One has to perform karma in order to attain moksha. It is not the mere knowledge. Then he says, to support his argument that the knowledge plus karma alone will free one from bondage, it is not the mere knowledge. To support his argument, he has to quote. Okay? And he quotes. That is what is Jnapakam cha ahuhu. What does he quote here? There's a verse. Atha chetvamimam dharmyam sangramam na karishyasi. This one verse, okay? Atha chet. See, if you don't perform, do this, if you don't do your duty now, okay, then you will attend sin, you will incur sin, and then he calls other verses, karman evadikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana. All these verses which, all the Gita verses which highlight the necessity and the importance of performing karma, okay? All the verses he quotes here. See, it's what is quoting, okay? Simply, see, people always quote and kill. Kuru karmaiva tasmatvam ityadi. So, ityadi, he quotes all these center verses. So, there are many verses in Bhagavad Gita in the following chapters, and which highlight, which talk about, which emphasize the importance and the necessity of performing one's duties and performing karma. The Purvapakshi here quotes those verses and says, see, in Bhagavad Gita itself, it is said that mere knowledge of the self will not free one from bondage, but one has to perform karma, okay, performance of duties, performance of karma along with the knowledge alone will free one from bondage. What is the proof? Bhagavad Gita says. Mm-hmm. Where is it said? These are the verses. He quotes some verses. Karmanya vadikaraste, etc., etc. He quotes those verses. It's okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then he says, and not only that, himsa yuktatvat,
himsa
vaidikam karma,
vaidikam karma
adharmaya,
adharmaya
iti
iyamapi, iyamapi
ashanka,
ashanka
nakarya,
nakarya.
He said, he says here, himsadi yuktatvat. See, fighting is what? Fighting means involving oneself in battle or fighting means what? It involves killing. Fighting means killing, okay? Bloodshed, causing bloodshed, which means causing injury. So, himsadi yuktatvat, causing injury. Therefore, what we may think here? Causing injury means what? Oh, that means this vaidikaha dharmaha adharmaya, we may think, we may mistake, okay? We may think Bhagavad Gita really makes people, it teaches people adharma. Why? Ahimsa is paramaha dharmaha. Non-hurting is the exalt of all the values. If non-hurting, non-injury, ahimsa is the exalt of all the values, then if Bhagavad Gita says, come on, go and okay, do your duty and kill your enemies in the battlefield, when it says, what does it mean? It supports himsa. It induces himsa. It encourages himsa. It encourages killing. Therefore, we can say Bhagavad Gita, in fact, encourages adharma, which is doing himsa in the form of, okay, in the form of killing. Adharmaya. So, not only that, Vaidikam karma. Now, so there are many Vedic rituals wherein, okay, wherein some, Vedic rituals wherein some, the which involves some animals sacrifice also. Therefore, we can say, it is meant for, it's all for Vaidikam karma, the Vedic ritual. In fact, Vedic ritual, Adi Bhagavad Gita, we can say, helps, makes a person an adharmi. You can think that, no. May you not have such doubt. May you not have such doubt. Bhagavad Gita, he says, the person who gives a wrong argument, okay, who person wrong argument, his argument is to say, knowledge is not the only means for moksha, knowledge accompanied by karma, knowledge with karma alone, okay, due to knowledge with action alone, free, is means for freedom. He says that, for that, he quotes this, he quotes other verses, and he also says, don't think, because Bhagavad Gita, encourages you to fight against adharma, doesn't mean fight against the goal, the encourages fighting, it does not mean really it makes you do the adharma, it helps you involve in adharma karyam, the himsa karyam, don't think that way. He quotes all these things. Katham, how this kshatram karma.
Kshatram karma.
Yudhalakshanam.
Yudhalakshanam.
Guru.
Guru.
Bhratru.
Bhratru.
Putradi.
Putradi.
Himsa lakshanam.
Himsa lakshanam.
Atyanta kruramapi.
Atyanta kruramapi.
Swadharmaha.
Swadharmaha.
Iti kritva.
Iti kritva.
Na adharmaya.
Na adharmaya.
Okay. So he says, kshatram karma. Kshatram karma means the duty to be done by, okay, kshatriya is what? The duty of kshatriya is fighting against the adharma, which involves killing. Even it involves the killing of one's own kith and kin, but if it is done as a duty, okay, the battle fought against adharma, it was killing, it was a killing of one's own kith and kin, people around, the teachers, etc. But if it is for protecting dharma, if it is for, from adharma, then it is not for, it does not encourage, we can't say, it encourages adharma. Even if the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita says, himsa is okay, killing is okay, hurting is okay. Okay, even then Bhagavad Gita does not really make a person adharmi. Why? It is killing people, the action, the battle or the fight wherein one has to kill the people, the wrongdoers, and so for the sake of protecting dharma against adharma, then if that killing really does not make one adharmi. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita does not encourage a person to do the adharma. So, he says all these things. Tad akarane.
Tad akarane.
Cha.
Cha.
Tataha.
Tataha.
Swadharmam.
Swadharmam.
Kirtim cha hitva.
kīrtiṃ ca hitvā
pāpam avāpsasi
pāpam avāpsasi.
See, if you don't do your sadharma, if you don't do your sadharma, if you don't do what you have to do, your duty, then definitely you will lose your sadharma. No, then you will incur sin, latent sin. Iti bruvata.
Iti bruvata.
Yavat jivadi.
Yavat jivadi.
Shruti choditanam.
Shruti choditanam.
Pashvadi.
Pashvadi.
Himsa lakshananam cha.
Himsa lakshananam cha.
Karmanam.
Karmanam.
Prageva.
Prageva.
Na.
Na.
Adharmatvam.
Adharmatvam.
Na adharmatvam.
Na adharmatvam.
Iti.
Iti.
Sunischitam.
Sunischitam.
Uktam bhavati.
Uktam bhavati.
Iti. Okay, make it very clear. So what he says here, see, if you don't do a duty, you will incur sin. Okay, there is a verse in Bhagavad Gita which highlights the importance of doing one's duty. If you don't do your duty, you will incur sin. That says, this person who raises the objection against saying that knowledge is the only means for moksha, he quotes that sentence saying, Bhagavad Gita, what is his argument? Talking so much, he says, knowledge is not the only means for moksha. Knowledge plus action, knowledge and performance of actions, performance of duties together, okay, really constitute the means for moksha. That is his argument. Is it clear? I was reading so much in Sanskritam, but I didn't want to translate it, okay? I really read the bhavartha of the bhashyam. And to say that, and he quotes all nice things. What are nice things he talks about? Don't think Bhagavad Gita makes one an adharmi, because it tells Arjuna to kill the adharmis. It induces him to fight against adharma. So you may mistake, don't think that way. Bhagavad Gita does not make one adharmi, Veda does not make one an adharmi. So he talks about it tells one to do the swadharma, it tells Arjuna do his duty as a kshatriya. Doing one's duty as a kshatriya, even if it was killing, still it is not adharma. All these things he says, which are nice things, the same what he wants to say here, mere knowledge is not the means for moksha. Performance of duties along with knowledge alone will free one from bondage. So here what should be the answer now? The Siddhanta comes, no. Knowledge alone is the only means for moksha. Karma is not the means for moksha at all. Jnana karma samuchayaha, synthesis of knowledge and action is not possible for moksha. That is, you have to make understand the limitation of karma. How much ever we do, how much ever we slog, we plan, we scheme, and we work and do things, and any action has its own limitation. No result of action will help you, will free you from limitations. So much is discussed here just to tell you, karma will not, performance of duties, doing different types of actions, plannings, doing things, sloggings, running around, all these actions definitely will not free one from limitations, free from bondage. Knowledge alone will free one from bondage. Knowledge is the only means for moksha. That has to be restated. Same Krishna, by the time the Bhashyam for this 11th, introduction to Bhashyam ends for the second 11th verse, he'll say, but how important it is to do one's duty, that he's going to talk later on. But we have to understand very clearly, knowledge is the only means for moksha. Karma is not the means for moksha. Performance of duties, doing different types of karma, you have the means for moksha, will not help, will not free one from bondage. Okay? But how important is to do the karma, where, when, how, we'll see later on. Okay? Now he says this much in this context. Tat asat. That's not true. That's not true. What is that? What's not true? Knowledge and action together become means for moksha. That is not true. Immediately has to jump. No, the answer is called Siddhantaha. Siddhanti comes now. First, Purvapakshi, the one who raises objection is Purvapakshi. And now comes the answer. What is the answer? Jnana Karmanishtayoho.
Jnana Karmanishtayoho.
Vibhaga Vachanate.
Vibhaga Vachanate.
Buddhi Dvaya Ashrayayoho.
Buddhi Dvaya Ashrayayoho.
Buddhi Dvaya.
Buddhi dvaya.
Ashrayayoho.
Ashrayayoho.
Ashochyan.
Ashochyan.
Ityadina.
Ityadina.
Bhagavata.
Bhagavata.
Yavate.
Yavate.
Swadharma mapicha.
Swadharma mapicha.
Avekshya.
Avekshya.
Iti.
Iti.
Yetadantena.
Yetadantena.
Granthena.
Granthena.
Yate.
Yate.
Parama.
Parama.
Artha.
Artha.
Paramartha.
Paramartha.
Atma tattva.
Atma tattva.
Paramarthatma tattva.
Paramarthatma tattva.
Nirupanam kritam.
Nirupanam kritam.
Tat sankhyam.
Tat sankhyam.
Tad vishaya buddhihi.
Tad vishaya buddhihi.
Atmanaha.
Atmanaha.
Janmadi.
Janmadi.
Shad.
Shad.
Vikriya bhavat.
Vikriya bhavat.
Akarta atma.
Akarta atma.
Iti.
Iti.
Prakaranartha.
Prakaranartha.
Nirupanat.
Nirupanat.
Yajnayate.
Yajnayate.
Sa.
Sa.
Sankhya buddhi.
Sankhya buddhi.
Okay, so what he says here, that is not true. Sa. Okay? Tad asat. Tad asat. That is not true. What is not true? Synthesis of knowledge and action. Knowledge and action together free one from bondage is not true. Knowledge alone frees one from bondage. But he says, why? Because Bhagavad Gita, what does Bhagavad Gita say here? Jnana karma nishtayoho. See, jnana nishta and karma nishta. Two life states. Jnana nishta and karma nishta are two life states. Two different life styles. Vibhaga vachana means, actually, they are two different life styles. They are distinguished from each other. Okay, and they're meant for people of two different levels. Buddhi ashrayoha means what now? Okay, a given buddhi, see, some minds are ready for the pursuit of knowledge. Some minds are not ready for the pursuit of knowledge. That's all. The prepared minded and the unprepared minded. Unprepared minded are not, okay, the people who are not ready, who are not prepared for the pursuit of knowledge, okay, are not to be considered inferior. They are not inferior. But Shastra has two lifestyles prescribed for two types of people. people of two different levels. People whose minds are ready for contemplation, ready for understanding the abstract nature of the self. Okay? And they are some people. There are also people who are not yet ready for understanding that. Who are not ready for the pursuit of knowledge. So nobody is superior, nobody is inferior. So people who are committed to the pursuit of knowledge are a group of people, and people who are committed to the pursuit of other lifestyle, karmanishta and jnanishta. Two whole lifestyles for two types of people. And he says here, what is that? And then he says, Sankhya Buddhihi. Okay, who are the jnananishtaha? Who are the karmanishtaha? What does the word jnanishta means? What does it mean, saying the lifestyle, lifestyle committed to, characterized by the commitment to the pursuit of knowledge, and the lifestyle characterized by, the commitment to live a life of yoga. To the karmanishta and jnananishta. We'll see that. So he says here, next sentence he says, to understand what is jnananishta and what is karmanishta, to understand what are these two different lifestyles, he says, see, in the second chapter, 11th verse, 11th verse onwards, till the 31st verse, 11th to 31st, we have not started doing the verses, we're still in the Bhashyam. Once you go to the verse, we'll be fast. From 11th to 31st, Krishna talks about the nature of the self. Atma Swarupa Lakshanam is discussed in the verses from number 11 to number 31. 11 to 20 verses. These 20 verses, Krishna discusses the nature of the self. So, he says, it edantena granthena. Yet he says, parama artha, paramartha, absolute reality, atma tattva nirupanam kritam. See, the nature of the truth of the absolute reality has been established, has been very well unfolded. The nature of the true, the nature of the truth of the absolute reality has been well established, well explained, well stated, well revealed in these verses. Which verses? From 11th to 31st of the second chapter. So that's called Sankhyam. He says, what is Sankhyam? That's Sankhyam. What does the word Sankhyam here? He says, Sankhya means knowledge. What is knowledge? Knowledge of the self is knowledge of the verses which discuss the nature of the self. Here is Sankhyam. The knowledge of the nature of the reality is Sankhyam. Knowledge of the self is what? Knowledge of the nature of the self is Sankhyam. And where is Sankhyam meant here? From 11th to 31st. From the 11th verse onwards till the 31st verse, in the second chapter, the 20 verses talk about the nature of the self. So, paramartha atma tattva nirupanam kritam. He says, it has been stated very well. And the nature of the self has been very well explained, established, very clearly said in these verses. And this is called Sankhyam. The knowledge of the self is said to be the Sankhyam. And tad vishaya buddhihi. Okay, Pratishya Buddhihi means the mind which has the knowledge of the self, the mind which has understood the knowledge of the self, are those who can have the capacity to understand the self as revealed in these verses. You know, the knowledge of the self. Those having the understanding of the Sankhyam, the nature of the self, is said to be Tadvishaya Buddhihi. Knowledge of the self. And those who have the Buddhi, those who are endowed with the knowledge of the self, are said to be Sankhyaha. We are going to see the next sentence now. Atmanaha.
Atmanaha.
Janmadi.
Janmadi.
Shadvikriya.
Shadvikriya.
Abhavat.
Abhavat.
Akarta.
Akarta.
Atma.
Atma.
Iti.
Iti.
Prakaranartha.
Prakaranartha.
Nirupanat.
Nirupanat.
Yajayate.
Yajayate.
Sa.
Sa.
Sankhya Buddhihi.
Sankhya Buddhi.
Okay. See, I'll repeat it again because it sounds like complicated. Listen carefully. He says, from the 11th verse onwards till the 31st verse, in these 20 verses, the nature of the truth of the absolute reality has been very well explained and stated. Okay? This is called Sankhyam. And here, how it has been explained now, what is Sankhyam? Sankhyam means the knowledge of knowledge that has been, that can be, knowledge of the self, nature of the reality is Sankhyam here. And he says, what is the nature of the self? What do those verses talk about? What do those verses say about the self? He says, self is free from sixfold modifications. Now we have not understood, we are going to understand later on. It's just before going to the text itself, a lot of discussions now. Okay? Those verses say the self is not subject to sixfold modifications, sixfold changes. What are the changes now? He says, jayate, jayate, vardhate, okay, viparinamate, apakshiyate, viparinamate, jayate, vardhate, viparinamate, kshiyate, apakshiyate, nashyati. It comes, no? First it's born, it grows, and undergoes metamorphosis, changes, and it still starts declining. Undergoes change, slowly starts declining, and declines, and then it disappears. What? This is all the Shadvikaraha, the six changes are inevitable on the part of the physical body. It has the birth, it grows, undergoes changes, a lot of changes take place, then slowly it starts declining, it becomes completely declines, then one day it disappears for good. Disappears. I mean, totally changes. The sixfold changes are definite for the physical body, whereas the self, the Atma, is free from the sixfold modifications or changes. How do we understand? We have not understood. We are going to understand when we go to next verse. This shloka, this here, it says, by reading and understanding the meaning of these 11 verses, the 20 verses from the 11th verse onwards, we are going to understand how Atma is free from the sixfold modifications. The self is free from sixfold modifications. Then, not only that, Akarta Atma, not only that, self is not the doer. Self is free from doership. Iti prakarana artha nirupanat. Okay? This is nirupana means it's established. So in these verses, the 20 verses from 11th to 31st, explain the nature of the self. How to explain? They establish, they prove, they make, they unfold how the self is free from doership, how the self is free from the sixfold changes, modifications, etc. They will establish. Okay? By such an explanation, such an unfoldment, we get the knowledge of the self. Ya buddhihi jayate sa sankhya buddhihi. Okay? The knowledge, see, knowledge gained as a result of the understanding of, the unfoldment of, the nature of the self as being free from sixfold modifications, as free from doership, etc. Explained in the 20 verses. It was said to be what now? Sankhya buddhihi. See, we will get the Sankhya buddhihi, means knowledge of the nature of the self. That's all. If you ask me what is Sankhya buddhihi, knowledge of the nature of the self is Sankhya buddhihi. For the knowledge of the nature of the, what is the nature of the self? Self is free from sixfold modifications, sixfold changes, which is birth, death, etc. And self is free from doership. This is the nature of the self. And how can you understand the nature of the self? Where is explained? In these verses. So when we, if we study the verses from 11th to 31st, we will understand the nature of the self. As how what I would understand the nature of the self being, okay, we understand the nature of the self being free from sixfold modifications and free from doership, etc. This understanding the nature of the self being free from sixfold modifications, from free from doership, etc., is said to be what? This Sankhya buddhihi. Is it clear now? Yeah. So now what he says, Isa yesham jnainam uchita bhavati te sankhyaha. Now this knowledge of the nature of the self, okay, those people who have this understanding of the self being free from sixfold modifications, self being free from doshpa, etc., who understand the nature of the self, they are said to be Sankhyaha. Sankhyaha means Sanyasinaha. I tell you one more word here. Sankhyaha means Sanyasinaha. Who are Sanyasis? Not the renunciates. Do you understand? Sankhyaha means people who have the understanding of the nature of the self, thereby who can dwell upon the nature of the self, or the Sankhyaha, who are ready for contemplation, or the Sankhyaha, who enjoy the contemplative disposition with an understanding of the nature of the self, or the Sankhyaha. Is it clear? It is just said, who are the Sankhyaha. Now you know what is Sankhyam, what is Sankhya buddhihi, and who are Sankhyaha? There are three things you have to understand. Knowledge of the self is Sankhyam, and okay, nature of the reality is Sankhyam, and having the knowledge of the nature of the self is Sankhya buddhihi. And those who have the knowledge of the self, nature of the self, are known as Sankhyaha. Therefore, this is very abstract, no? See, the abstract fact about this self, abstract nature of this self, and it is very difficult for everybody to understand the abstract nature of this self. And even if you understand the abstract nature of this self, okay, and to be able to dwell upon that nature of the self, very difficult. So, who are the people, so for whom is it appropriate? Who are the ready for? Uchita means appropriate. Okay, who is it for? The ready-minded people. People who enjoy the contemplative disposition, okay, and who are mentally prepared, mature people, people who are free from who are pure and steady minded, they are the uchitaha. You know, they are the suitable people, suitable for the pursuit of knowledge. There is some other should not pursue knowledge, okay? He talks about the qualification, eligibility. They are the sankhyaha, sannyasinaha. Therefore, for such people, is what now? Such people, they don't need to really, they don't have obligatory duties, karmas. There is a different lifestyle. Being committed to the pursuit of knowledge. Only come to pursuit of knowledge. Even then, they don't give up any karma. Other karmas are not given up there. This is Sankhya Buddhi. So next he's going to talk about Jnana Nishtha means the lifestyle characterized by the commitment, the pursuit of the knowledge of the self. That is meant for the Sankhyas, the sannyasis who are ready for, who are pure and steady mentally and who are ready for, who enjoy the conventional disposition, who are ready for such, who enjoy that disposition, who are ready for that lifestyle, who are prepared minded. Prepared mind are the people of Jnana Nishtha, Sankhyaha. Then he says, Etasyaha Buddhehe Janmanaha Prak Etasyaha. Did it know? Can you follow that?
Yeah.
Etasyaha
Buddhehe
Janmanaha
Prak Atmanaha
Dehadi
Vyatirittatva
Kartrutva
Bhoktrutvadi
Apekshaha
Dharma,
adharma,
adharma,
viveka purvaka, moksha sadhana, anushthana lakshana, yoga, tadvishaya buddhi, yoga buddhi. Okay, he talks about in these things the knowledge of yoga and the knowledge of karma, knowledge of yoga and knowledge of knowledge. You understand this. Knowledge of knowledge and knowledge of yoga. Two different things here. See, what is yoga? Another lifestyle, karma nishtha. Karma nishtha is another lifestyle and jnana nishtha is another lifestyle. Jnana nishtha means the jnana yoga lifestyle, or you can say sannyasi lifestyle. And karma nishtha means karma yoga lifestyle. Okay? Karma yoga lifestyle is called karma nishtha. And what is jnana yoga, jnana nishtha? Jnana yoga lifestyle or sannyasi lifestyle. Can tell, jnana nishtha means jnana yoga lifestyle or sannyasi lifestyle. Living a life of sannyasa is called what? Jnana nishtha. Jnana nishtha. And those who live a life of sannyasa are known as sankhyaha. And who are the sankhyaha? Who enjoy the contemplative disposition, who are prepared minded, for whom it is appropriate. Now people who are ready, this abstract knowledge of the self is appropriate for them, who are ready for understanding knowledge of the self, okay, and to contemplate upon the nature of the self, they are the sankhyaha. Okay? And now next sentence says, and who are the, what is the yoga? Karma nishtha means karma yoga lifestyle. So what is karma yoga? What is the yoga? See, the lifestyle, okay, wherein it is the lifestyle which is governed by the knowledge of right and wrong. Dharma, adharma, viveka, purvakam. It is here. Dharma, adharma, viveka, purvakaha. That means the lifestyle which is governed by the discriminative understanding of what is right and what is wrong, which is totally governed by dharma, the values, and moksha sadhana ashtanga lakshana dehaadi vyatiriktatva kartrutva bhoktrutvaadi apekshaha. So this, see, before, no, for one to have the arjya of this nature of the self, before that mind has to become ready, and for mind to become ready, and they need to live a lifestyle which is called a karma yoga lifestyle. Therefore, the karma yoga lifestyle is a preparatory lifestyle. The lifestyle living which one becomes prepared for the knowledge of the self. He says here, this here. See, definitely the people who live a life of karma yoga also know very well what is that. Definitely, the self is not the body. Okay, self is not the body. Self is different from the body. Self is different from the body. They know this much, and then they know. But still, there's a doership. There's still enjoyership. Doership is there. Enjoyership is there, and they know they do all the karma. They have desires. Everything will be there, and whatever karma they do, the karma is governed by dharma. All their actions are governed by dharma. So the lifestyle which involves actions governed by dharma with doership and enjoyership, you know, is called yogaha. So he says, and this knowledge of yoga is called yoga buddhihi. And those who live a life of this, those have the knowledge of the yoga, those who live a life of karma yoga, they are called yoginaha, karma yoginaha, we can say here. So here, this it talks about two. Let me tell you now, together. Shastram talks about twofold lifestyles. We are going to see later on in detail from the third chapter. But even in second chapter, we are going to see. Shastram talks about twofold lifestyles. One is karma yoga lifestyle. Another one is sannyasa lifestyle. And wherein a karma yogi has to do all the duties, all the actions. A sannyasi is free from obligatory duties. Okay? And two lifestyles are different, but still for both the karma yogi and the sannyasi, end is the same. What is the end? Moksha is the end. Sannyasi also wants freedom from bondage. Karma yogi also wants freedom from bondage. There are two different things. Karma yogi and sannyasi both want freedom from bondage, freedom from sorrow, freedom from limitations. Therefore, end is the same for karma yogi and sannyasi. Lifestyles are different, but end is the same. Are these two lifestyles prescribed for, though it is prescribed for two different types of people, both the lifestyles are important for all the people. Everyone has to go through sannyasa mentally in order to attain jnanam, in order to become free from bondage. One has to become mature, one has to become contemplative in order to ascertain the vision of the truth, to become free from bondage. Understand? One has to grow. So, to become ready to develop, to have the contemplative disposition, to become dispassionate towards other ends, and to conquer upon the nature of the self, to have the ascertained vision of the self, to become free from samsara bondage, one has to live a life of what? A life of karma yoga. So, living a life of karma yoga prepares one for jnana yoga, living a life of jnana yoga. So we can't say one is important, one is not important. Both are equally important. Understand? Knowledge alone is the means for moksha. Therefore, one has to commit oneself to the pursuit of knowledge. And those who are ready for committing themselves to the pursuit of knowledge are the sannyasinaha. Okay? Until one becomes ready for ready for knowledge, a contemplative life, though they have to prepare themselves for that, for which they have to live a life of karma yoga. They hardly have karma yoga. So karma yoga lifestyle is a preparatory lifestyle where one has to do all one's duties, all one's karmas. One has to do all the karmas, one has to do all one's duties. But how one should do? We are going to see in detail the karma yoga later on. I tell you, the karma yoga which is going to be described is very beautiful. Here he just says, because Bhagavan talks about, distinguishes two lifestyles. One is karma yoga lifestyle, the other as the jnana yoga lifestyle. As karma nishta and jnana nishta, he says, okay, the two lifestyles are prescribed there. And for people, for the prepared-minded jnana yoga lifestyle, for those who are not yet prepared for contemplation, the karma yoga lifestyle is prescribed. By living a life of karma yoga, they had to prepare themselves for the jnana yoga, ultimately for knowledge. There is no choice. Should I choose this or that? If you are not prepared, choose a life of karma yoga. If you are ready, you don't need to ask. You can easily choose the life of jnana yoga, contemplative life. So this has to prepare, one has to prepare people for others. So why is it said there? Therefore, one cannot be a karma yogi and a sannyasi simultaneously. Can you say that light and darkness can exist together? Can you say that doership and non-doership is possible for both to exist in the same person? Not possible. I'm the doer, I'm not the doer. Can you say that? It's not possible. You can't say that. That means what? What does it mean? Therefore, because the two lifestyles are prescribed, and one cannot be simultaneously a karma yogi and a jnana yogi, one has to be a karma yogi first until he becomes prepared mentally. Then, okay, one has to, the karma nishta, the karma yoga lifestyle is for the one who is not prepared. Once it prepares him for jnana nishta, once he is prepared, then he can commit himself to the pursuit of knowledge. Because Shastram talks about two lifestyles, it is not possible for knowledge and karma to be together, to be the means for moksha. Knowledge alone is the moksha. Does not say. And he is also going to say, in that case, Arjuna need not ask this question. Oh, if knowledge is the only means for moksha, hey Krishna, then why do you ask me to, engage me in this, this cruel act of killing my own people in the battlefield? Why did Arjuna ask this question? Because even in his question, it is very clear, knowledge is the only means for moksha. This question is not at all necessary. Karma, the performance of duties and doing actions plus knowledge together can never be the means for moksha. Knowledge is the only means for moksha. Understand? But what he says is, knowledge alone is the means for moksha, but for knowledge to rise, one has to be prepared mentally. Okay, one mind has to become ready. One has to have the contemplative disposition for which one has to become mentally pure and steady. Please understand this. But to become pure and steady, one has to do one's karma with the proper attitude. Not simply perform the karma. One has to do one's duties. One has to do the karma with the proper attitude, with an understanding of the concept of Lord, which will help him, okay? Which will prepare his mind for yoga, knowledge. In fact, the word yoga itself means anything which prepares the mind for knowledge is yoga. It's very important. Yoga means what? See, yoga means knowledge. Yoga also means what? Anything which prepares your mind for knowledge is yoga. And here it is very well said, the karma, the performance of duties and doing one's actions, if it contributes for the mental preparation, it contributes for preparing the mind for knowledge, then karma becomes yoga. How to convert the karma into yoga, that's a different topic, okay, that's a different thing. So here the argument is, because Krishna talks about the karma yoga lifestyle separately, jnana yoga lifestyle separately, for those who are prepared karma jnana yoga lifestyle, for those who are not prepared karma yoga lifestyle, so living a life of karma yoga, people become prepared for jnana yoga, then they can pursue, okay, live a life of karma jnana yoga, thereby they can attain jnanam and moksha. Therefore, jnanam and karma together cannot be the means for moksha. Knowledge is the only means for moksha. Is it clear? Have I confused you? I know it's quite a big topic here. A lot of Sanskrit words. What I want to say here, I mean, the next portion when I read it will be very simple, very easy. This is the only area little big words are used. In fact, I have not yet described what is a sannyasa lifestyle. I didn't explain what is jnana nishta, what is karma nishta. I just said Shankaracharya quotes these two verses, jnana nishta and karma nishta, karma yoga lifestyle, jnana yoga lifestyle. Okay? Because these two lifestyles are discussed here, one as the preparatory for the other, which itself is a proof that knowledge alone is the means for moksha, knowledge and action together cannot be the means for moksha. That is an answer. Is it clear? Clear or not? I think a lot of things, yeah, my God, a lot of things. The same thing, I can just read out this passage. Tathacha Bhagavata Vibhakte Dve Buddhi Nirdhishte Yesha
Te Bhita
Sankhye
Buddhi
Yoge
Vimam
Shrunu
Iti
Tayoscha Sankhya Buddhyashrayam Jnana Yogena Nishtam Sankhyanam Bhaktam Vakshati
Pura
Vedatmana
Maya Prokta
Iti
Tathacha
Yoga Buddhyashrayam
Karma Yogena
Nishtam
Bhaktam
Vakshyati
Karma Yogena
Yoginam
Iti
Evam
Sankhya Buddhim
Yoga Buddhim cha
Ashritya
Dve Nishte
Vibhakte
Bhagavata Eva
Ukte
Jnana Karmanoho
Kartrutva
Akartrutva
Ekatva
Anekatva
Buddhashrayoho
Yugapat
Eka Purusha
Ashrayatva
Asambhavam
Pashyata. Okay. What he says in two different lives, see, in knowledge there cannot be many things. In knowledge everything will be reduced to one. There will be knowledge of oneness. Whereas in ignorance you can't help seeing the plurality. In knowledge there is not, and there will be non-duality. In ignorance there will be plurality and multiplicity. In knowledge there cannot be doership. In ignorance there will be doership. Okay? So in jnana yoga there can't be doership, there can't be plurality. Whereas in Karma Yoga, there will be plurality, there will be multiplicity, there will be duality, there will be doership. Okay? Therefore, for a sannyasi, sannyasi's understanding, in the understanding of a sannyasi, who is given to the jnana nishtha lifestyle, for him, it's, even though the vision has to be ascertained, there is oneness of reality, there is non-duality, is real for the person. And second thing, there is no doership on the part of the self. But for a karma yogi, still there is duality, there is multiplicity, and there still there is doership. Okay? This is understanding. And here, karma yogi does all his duty with certain attitude in order to prepare himself, in order to become mentally pure and steady, which is a preparation required for the knowledge. It's a prerequisite qualification. In fact, karma yoga becomes an indirect means for moksha, not the direct means for moksha. Performance and now. So jnana yoga is the direct means for, jnana is the direct means for moksha. Knowledge is the only means for moksha. Karma cannot become the means for moksha. Karma by itself can become the means for moksha. Karma with the knowledge also can become the means for moksha. Jnana is the only means for moksha. But for one, for the mind to become prepared and ready for knowledge, it has to become pure and steady, but one has to do the karma. Performance of karma is inevitable. Okay? Is important. Why? In order to be prepared for the knowledge. Therefore, living a life of karma yoga or karma nishta, karma yoga lifestyle is an indirect means for moksha. Because it prepares the mind for knowledge. But they together, they cannot become means for moksha. Is it clear?
Yeah.
I don't know whether I have made it very clear to you or not. Because a lot of Sanskrit must have really baffled you today, I think.
The thing that really was bothering me about this was that admittedly that karma yoga is a preparatory stage for jhana yoga. And obviously the two can't be synthesized together.
Yeah.
But surely my doubt was in the area that surely even for the sannyasin there must be some kind of doership, some kind of doing for him, let's say to study the scriptures and so on. But you've just made very clear that for the sannyasi there is no sense of doership because his mind is now sufficiently purified for him to not identify with actions of any kind. And therefore, his mind is sufficiently quiet to see that he himself is not involved in action. Therefore, he can't be a doer. Therefore, karma yoga is not appropriate to him. And therefore, any doing and study and the like is going to be just happening before him. And therefore not a karma as far as he's concerned, because he's free from karma.
What I'm saying, see, a sannyasi, a sankhya, a sannyasi, a jnanishtha person, a person who's given to the life of jnananishtha, jnana yoga lifestyle, also has to do some actions. No human being can ever remain without doing any actions. Please understand this. A sannyasi has to do his actions. That is why I came running and cooked food and we ate. I had a lot of actions. My God. Nobody can remain without doing any actions. Sannyasi has to do the actions. A karma yogi has to do the actions. A karmi who is not a karma yogi, okay? but doesn't have any purusharth nischaya. He also has to do actions. Every human being, every living being, everyone has to do the actions. Performing duties, doing actions is inevitable, unavoidable. Nobody has any choice about doing something or the other. You have to choose something or the other. That is how the nature is. But here, what I'm saying, see, the sannyasi doesn't have to do much. Why? Because of the understanding. Who is a sannyasi here? A sankhyaha, according to this text, sankhyaha is a sannyasi. Who is a sankhyaha? The sankhyaha, the sannyasi, the one who is given to the life of sannyasa, the sankhyaha is the one who has sankhya buddhihi. One has sankhya buddhihi. What does the word sankhya buddhi mean? Being endowed with the knowledge of the self, being free from sixfold changes, modifications, and self being free from doership, etc. Being endowed with the knowledge of the self is sankhya buddhihi. Sankhya, sannyasi is the one who has sankhya buddhi. Sankhya buddhi means being endowed with the knowledge of the self. One is under not just the self, the sankhya. That means one who knows the nature of the self. One who knows the nature of the self. That means what? One who has studied the Shastram, one who has understood what is the nature of the self, one who knows what is real, what is not real, but still he has understood the nature of the self, but he has yet to ascertain the nature of the self. He has, with the help of the study of the Shastra, with the help of the teacher, by studying the Shastram, one who has Sankhya Buddhi, the sannyasi, knows how the self is not the doer, how the self is free from doership. He knows the nature of the self. How the self is not born, how the self is not subject to death, how the self is free from all changes, etc. He has understood the nature of the self. He knows the abstract nature of the self. Sannyasi is the one who has understood, who has gained the knowledge of the abstract nature of the self. And then he not only has understood the nature of the self, the one who is able to dwell upon the nature of the self. He has understood, therefore he can dwell upon the nature of the self. Without understanding, how can you dwell upon the nature of the self? Without knowing what the self is, how can you dwell upon the nature of the self? So sannyasi is the one who has studied the Shastram with the help of the teacher, thereby who has understood the nature of the self, thereby who can contemplate upon the nature of the self. Such a person is the sannyasi. Sankhyaha. And though he is doing lot of karma, lot of actions, sannyasi also has to do many actions. I told him, nobody, no human being can sit without doing any actions. But the sannyasi does not have social obligatory duties. Sannyasi does not, because sannyasi has some dispassion towards other things. The more dispassionate you are, the more he understands the limitations of other things. And the more dispassionate a person becomes, the more you are dispassionate, the less you have to do. That's all I'm saying. I don't say sannyasi doesn't need to do any action at all. Sannyasi has to eat, drink, sleep, get up, walk around, talk to people. Everything he has to do. But sannyasi does not have obligatory duties. Sannyasi, because of his dispassion towards many things, because of his passion only for the knowledge, and he doesn't have many desires, therefore doesn't need to do a lot of work. Relatively, comparatively, he has, his actions are very minimized. Not many actions are there. What if the obligatory duties are not there? Tell me. Then basically he has to, the sannyasi has to fulfill the natural requirements, sangatas, etc. For he has to act. But definitely not, because he is free from disease, binding disease. Sannyasi is free from binding disease. Therefore, he has to do certain things, that's all. But even then, because he has understanding of the nature of the self, even if he is doing, he or she is doing, the understanding of self, he remains, because always contemplative, he remains himself, definitely, how self is not the doer, but the doer is the self. Okay, he knows it, understanding is there. He understands, not, he doesn't say, I'm not the doer. In understanding, he has understanding cognitively, okay, that the appreciation that self is not the doer. And he knows, oh, what is this? Only the self. The second other than the self. This knowledge is there. Okay? Therefore, such a person, see, therefore, this is sannyasa lifestyle. The person is always contemplative upon the nature of the self, definitely cannot have the doership. Okay? Still, it has to be ascertained. It has to be assimilated. The vision has to be assimilated. But still, the contemplative person, the person who is contemplating upon the nature of the self, knowing the nature of the self, having understood the nature of the self as the non-doer, etc. No? Definitely is free from obligatory duties. This lifestyle has been prescribed. Because this lifestyle will help a person to have the ascertained vision of the assimilated vision of the nature of the self, the steadfast knowledge of the self, which is in fact freedom. For which one has to become to be able to see, for one, the mind has to become subtle to understand the subtle fact of the subtle nature of the reality. I was talking about the subtle. The mind has to become subtle. See, sometimes the minds are very gross. I tell you, the difficulty is if the gross mind cannot comprehend, cannot apprehend, cannot appreciate the nature of subtle nature of the reality. The mind has to become sharp, subtle, to understand subtle facts, subtle nature of reality. For the mind to become subtle, it has to become pure and steady. The disturbed, distracted, restless mind cannot grasp anything. The mind has to be cut off, it has to be steady. It has to have certain purity. It has to be free from all the impurities. I'll talk about the purification of the mind later on. Now it's on my topic. See, everything I can talk so much.
I've got two questions.
Yeah. I'll come back to finish this. So, the mind, the purity and the steadiness, okay? Very important. So, without that, it is not easy to grasp. And even if you have grasped it, please understand, as simultaneously, mental purification and steadiness of the mind, understanding nature of the self, everything can happen simultaneously. The karma yogi also has an understanding of the self, I tell you. But he might be contemplative. May be contemplative. This contemplative disposition may not be there for the karma yogi. So, okay, until even if one has understood the nature of the self, still the contemplative disposition is not there. Mental sadness is not there. Then for that one has to prepare oneself. So that preparedness required for, okay, being contemplative, one has to definitely do the duties. One has to do all one's obligated duties, all the actions, with certain attitude. What is the attitude one has to entertain in order to convert his actions into preparatory yoga, that is a different thing. Okay. So Karma Yoga lifestyle. That's all. Anyway, the two lifestyles are prescribed. That does not mean a sannyasi doesn't need to do any karma at all. Sannyasi does the karma, but in his understanding, definitely there, even though self being the non-doer has not yet been ascertained, the self being the non-doer has been understood.
What's the difference?
The self being the non-doer has, even though the self being the non-doer has not yet been ascertained, assimilated, it has been understood. Even the karma yogi might have understood the self being the non-doer. Okay? But still, having understood the self being the non-doer also, still the mind is not pure and steady, it's not still ready for contemplation. Understand? Then karma yoga lesson is better because it'll help. One has to do this.
I understood. Do you mean known, theoretically known must be so, and by ascertained do you mean known from direct experience?
No, it's not. No, that's not true. Again, I said there's not a thing of theoretical understanding. Understanding means understanding. Understanding was a theory. Understanding means understood. But still we forget. I tell you here, this is the problem. Suppose there are two things. Karma is different from jnanam. I'll explain this to you. Please listen. There's a karma kanda in Veda where to get the result you have to know first, then you have to do also. You study what is the ritual which has to be performed, okay, how it has to be performed, and what are the mantras to be recited, who is the devata to be invoked, how many times you have to recite the mantra, everything you learn first. Having learnt everything, if you don't perform the ritual, you won't get the result. First knowledge, know, then the knowledge has to be implemented. You have to then do the karma. Okay, you have learnt first how to do the karma, then you get the result. There, if you don't do it, you have theory, not just theoretical knowledge, but you don't put into practice, you don't get the result. That is fine. But with jnana kanda, if you say, there is nothing to be practiced. In fact, very word practical Vedanta is a problem. Satyam. The Shankaracharya, I tell you Satyam. There is nothing to practice. Either eyes remain closed, the light is there, it is not seen. If somebody helps you to open the eyelids are open, what practice do you need to do to see the light? Seeing light is not something practiced afterwards. Just see.
So what do you mean by assimilated as opposed to understood?
Yeah, I'm coming to the point. Understand? Therefore, there's no such thing called theoretical knowledge and practical knowledge. Right? That is only in karma it is possible. You have to learn the theory, then put into practice. But with reference to jnanam, in karma, with reference to the performance of actions, you have to learn how to do, what to do, when to do, how to do. Then you have to do, now put the knowledge into practice to get the result. Whereas with reference to knowledge, there's nothing to do, know. Knowledge itself is the result. Okay? Then let me come to the next question. What do we mean by the word assimilation or ascertainment? Okay? Suppose if I understand, how does the sugar taste? it is sweet. Sugar tastes sweet, it is sweet. And it is not bitter. One more thing, okay? External. It is not bitter, it is sweet. And once I have the sugar into my mouth, put in my mouth, I know the taste of the sugar. And then, once I put it, and I have to remind myself, okay, I know sugar is sweet. I've understood it. The person who has not yet tasted the sugar cannot know how the sugar tastes. Once you tasted the sugar, you know it is sweet. But to distinguish the sweetness, sugar is sweet. Okay? How you feel when the sugar is there? How what is sweetness? That you have to remain. The taste of the sugar is sweet. Taste of the sugar is sweet. With how you ascertain it. Then you never forget. Sugar means what sweetness is. Sugar and sweetness, you can never forget it.
So ascertainment is direct experience.
Ascertainment is doubt-free understanding. First you have understanding and steadfast doubt-free understanding is ascertainment. We can have understanding, you still may have doubts. But doubt-free understanding is ascertainment, assimilation. But doubts may arise because of your purva samskara, because of the orientation, because of the habits. As an expression of habitual error, the doubts may be there. Okay? And even having understood. So all those doubts will resolve in ascertainment. Which is in a constant. Right? What you have understood, you have to dwell upon constantly, then all the doubts will resolve. That's all. But that is what is said there. Anyway, let me tell you the thing. Today, the thing is, the previous class, it was said, why Krishna started talking about the nature of the self? Because knowledge is the only means for moksha. He has to free one from bondage. All the people in him. So he had Arjuna as Nimitta, instrumentally he started talking. Then the objection was raised, knowledge alone is not the means for moksha. Knowledge also, one has to perform duties. Doing actions along with knowledge alone will free one from bondage. So it's what is said in Bhagavad Gita. So he quotes all the verses which highlight the importance of doing the duties and actions. Then for which the answer was given, it's not true. Krishna himself talks about two lifestyles. If both knowledge and karma together form the means of moksha, means for moksha. Okay? That means he need not have talked about two different lifestyles. He could have said, now both knowledge and karma are important for moksha. He could have said that, simply. He didn't say that. Two lifestyles he talks about. He distinguished lifestyles, he distinguished one from the other, saying one has to prepare, for the other. That means they're not two different means. Knowledge is the means for moksha, but karma performed with an attitude becomes yoga, which prepares the mind for knowledge. Therefore, karma yoga, performance of duties, performance of actions with a certain attitude, become an indirect means for moksha because it prepares the mind for knowledge. Therefore, they both together, synthesis of karma and jnanam, jnana karma samuchayaha is not possible. Jnanam is the only means for moksha. Therefore, don't have any doubts. Be committed to the pursuit of knowledge. Okay? Let us study, let us understand what Krishna is going to say, talk about the nature of the self. That is what he is going to say. That. Okay. What's the doubt you have? No?
One is a small one. I'll leave that one for me.
No, you can have both.
The word,
I want to know both the doubts.
The word Sankhya, I understood the word Sankhya to mean not a person who is, you said it's the same as a sannyasi.
Actually, Sankhya, the two words. Sankhya means the Sankhya Buddhi Yuktaha. Sankhya is equal to Sankhya Buddhi Yuktaha. Sankhya Buddhi Yuktaha means the one who is endowed with the knowledge. One who is endowed with the knowledge of what? Knowledge of the nature of the self. What is the nature of the self? That is explained in the verses from number 11 to number 21st, which we are going to see. And the second word is, he talks about the yogaha. What is yogaha? Okay, the performance of duties and doing performance of actions with a certain attitude which prepare the mind for that knowledge with Sankhyam, which will convert a person into a Sankhyaha, okay, is what said to be the Yogaha. And those who are endowed with the knowledge of the yoga, what is yoga, okay, are called yogi, yoginaha, karma yoginaha.
I thought the Sankhyas were a certain branch of knowledge or
logic. Yeah, that's also true. There is also one of the sixfold schools of thought, whereas Sankhyaha are also people. Okay? That Sankhya is different.
Okay.
Ah, now I want to ask that. Okay. The Sankhya school of philosophy, that Sankhya is not brought in here. Those Sankhyas are different, okay? They are problematic people. One does not think about them. Here, Bhagavan talks about, here the word Sankhyam is used as knowledge. Okay? I mean, that by which Samyak is very well understood is Sankhyam. Samyak khyayate anena iti Sankhyam.
The second question,
yeah,
which is this. You say that, firstly, you have to have karma yoga.
Yeah.
Preparing the buddhi.
Yeah. Mind.
The mind. Now, as I understand, this is where most of us are with the karma yoga. We are still bound, certainly bound by action, also bound by the idea of doership, so on.
See, what I'm saying, I'll tell you one thing. Karma yoga, in karma yoga, okay, the people who are given to the life of karma yoga definitely have purushartha nischayaha. Definitely know the ultimate end being mokshaha. Freedom from all limitations and sorrow. And they know knowledge of the self being the only means, okay, for moksha also is very clear for them. They know that. And they also, they know the value of knowledge. And they also know to have the ascertained vision of the knowledge of the self, you know, vision of the nature of the self, the mind has to become contemplative, for which the mind has to become pure and steady. And in order to have the pure and steady mind, the only way is that they have to do their duties with the proper attitudes. They know the value of becoming, being mentally pure and steady. Therefore, and those, they also have an understanding of the concept of Lord. They also know the self being distinct from, different from the body, mind, and complex. But still they know there is doership and enjoyership. And they know it is only the ascertained vision of the knowledge of the self, vision of the truth, it is possible for us to become free from doership and enjoyership. Until we get that vision, until we become prepared for contemplation, to have that vision, and we have to do the karma, with certain attitude. Okay? That is why, and this possible still, this attitude with which they do the karma converts their action into a preparing yoga.
But the question is this.
What is it?
You have said, I think you have said, that all one has to do is to keep listening, keep listening, keep listening.
Yeah.
Until all the doubts are resolved.
Yeah.
But it sounds like this is not possible while one is at the karma yoga stage.
That's not true. The more you listen, the more you listen, the more you listen, a karma yogi, as a karma yogi, need not be, you can become the Sankhya.
Permanently or just
hmm?
For a time?
No, the more you listen, the more you listen, the more you listen. It's a question of time. You keep on, see, constant listening converts a karmi into a karma yogi into a sannyasi. Karma yogi into the constant listening prepares the unprepared mind for knowledge. Constant listening helps the mind to become contemplative. Constant listening helps the mind remain in contemplation. Constant listening helps the mind to ascertain the vision, ascertain the understanding. Constant listening liberates one, frees one. Satya. That is Satya. Is it clear today? Am I very clear? Because I know, I have not discussed about Karma Yoga. When I take the topic of Karma Yoga, it will be very, very clear. When I take the topic of nature of the self, it will be very, very clear. Here, today's argument is, okay, if at all we have any doubt, Bhagavad Gita itself talks about the performance of duties. Where Krishna himself tells Arjuna to go and fight against his cousins, Adharma. That means he himself insists that one should do the karma. That means Gita emphasizes, Bhagavad Gita says, Arjuna is not the means for moksha. Karma also, one has to do karma also along with the pursuit of knowledge for liberation. Therefore, that's what his argument. And that is not true. Knowledge alone is the only means for moksha, but karma performed by attitude becomes yoga, which prepares the mind for knowledge. Therefore, karma is an indirect means. We can say karma as an indirect means for moksha, but not the direct means for moksha. In fact, knowledge alone is that means for moksha that has been established today. Is it clear? Maybe last class we had some language was simple. This time, a lot of things. Okay, a lot of things. But I think it's better not to read the translation of the Bhashyam. The translation of the Bhashyam is really...
It's quite entertaining.
Hmm?
He says... he says for Nasatya, he says, all that has been said is vacuous, he says. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For Tathasat, all that has been said above is vacuous.
Yeah. Vacuous. See, and then Buddhi, he has knowledge, a lot of things. My God, I tell you, this is highly expressive, highly expressive. See, if anybody tries to translate the Sanskritam into English, they have to see the bhava. They have to see what exactly is implied by the acharya's heart. One should know the English language, one should know the Sanskrit language, one should know the heart of Acharya. Then when they present it in English language, they can exactly give. See, karma nishta, jnana nishta. No, ashrayoha buddhi, he says. Suppose we just say, twofold knowledge, what is it? Right, Krishna, it's two lifestyles. Nishta means a lifestyle, committed lifestyle. It's nishta.
So the one important thing you're saying is that it's not that you have to do karma yoga, from here to here, and then when you get to this point, then you start doing jnana yoga.
It's not that. See, I tell you one thing. Suppose the child has to study, finish the schooling until he becomes 15.
Mm.
When he becomes 16, okay, he has to go to the university. What does it mean? What does it mean? Okay, either you can go to school or you can go to college. Does it mean that? No. You have to finish your schooling in order to go to the university. That means one has to go to the school to enter into the university. Both are important. But going to the school itself is not the purpose. Going to the school is ultimately to enter into the university. Not to stop with the school. So it does not say, okay, either you go to school or you go to the college. No. University doesn't say that. There's no choice. No? You had to go to school in order to go to the university ultimately. That means what?
Yes, but the difference is here that you don't go to school and go to university. You were saying, I think, that while you are a karma yogi, you still hear knowledge, you still listen to knowledge. Knowledge helps to clarify.
No, you know it's the value of entering into the university. Yeah, you know the value of entering into the
university. It's not that you're not qualified to hear the knowledge. You are still...
No. You are... What I'm saying, the mental preparedness. See, without listening, even you cannot enter into the stream, without knowing the value of entering into the university, you won't even enter into the school. Understand? Now that you had listening is possible... Listening is possible, understanding is possible. Having understood, okay, for assimilation, you need to entertain a mental disposition, which is not possible, which needs some preparation, for which you have to live a life of Karma Yoga. See, that's what I'm saying. It's not that there's no choice, okay? You have to either this or that. No, everyone has to go through this. Until you become ready, this is the lifestyle. It's not a question of, see, a karma yogi also has to listen. See, without having heard, listen to the shastram, it is not possible for one to have purushartha nischaya. One cannot become clear about the ultimate end being freedom from all limitations. And one cannot understand the value of knowledge. And one cannot really... Now become a karma yogi. One cannot change his attitude. Lot of things. One must have heard. One must have understood really. See, karma yogi and sannyas. That's why Bhagavad Gita we are going to see later on in the future in the verses. Okay, both are equally great. Sannyasa lifestyle is great. Karma yoga lifestyle is great. Equally important. Why? Because for both the lifestyle, people of both the lifestyles, end is the same. Moksha. End is one knowledge of the reality. Okay? Suppose that for the person who enjoys the contemplative disposition, okay, he can just be contemplative. To be contemplative implies what? To have taken one attention from everything else. So if you don't have the contemplative disposition, what does it mean? You have not yet taken your attention from everything else. Which means still lingering. So to bring the attention, drag the attention back to everything and to place it only here, you need to grow for some more time. Okay, allow yourself to be in other things where all your mind is attended. But let it have the attitude. That's why look at everything in Aishwara. The concept of Lord comes in there. And have an Ishwarpana buddhi, have prasada buddhi, lot we're going to see other things. I don't want to talk about karma yoga now. Lot of things. It's a big thing, karma app. I tell you, the karma yoga lesson is a beautiful thing. We'll see later on. Other things talk about. So both of them must have purushartha nischaya. For both of them, end is moksha. For both of them, no knowledge itself is the ultimate. Knowledge and moksha being identical. Both of them know the value of knowledge. Both of them know the value of being contemplative. So one enjoys the contemplative disposition because of his dispassion towards other things. or some maturity is there. Other person knowing everything also, he is not able to take, the mind is not still ready. How much he has to live a life of karma yoga for some more time. And this living a life of karma yoga will prepare him for this contemplative disposition. That's all.
Five o'clock.
Okay, still stop it. But I feel really dissatisfied with today's class.
Why?
Because I feel like talking, make it very clear about the karma yoga. See, the topic I never want to stop. It's a very beautiful thing. I just touched today. We have not entered, okay? The one paragraph of the Bhashyam itself takes all of our time. Because I read it out, no? When it become clearer. Okay, next argument is very beautiful. Very beautiful. I'm looking forward to that. Because I didn't want to miss this part of the Bhashyam. That is why I didn't want to. I want them to be exposed to the complete Bhashyam, Gita Bhashyam, Shankaracharya. Because mostly many people skip this part. And they talk everything in English and they go away. They won't read out. Even people who do this. So that's why I want to read it out today. At least let them listen to this. I can even, I don't mind if I do it. No? Once I finish the whole the Bhashyam of the second chapter, this particular, before I finish this, I can take up and again, I can give you notes like. Yeah, I'm thinking.
Okay.